from the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, Project Veritas outs Google, the annual report on international religious freedom, pregnancy resource centers in Ohio get more money, and a bill to defund public broadcasting. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and homeschool dad. I want to begin today's show by letting you know that on Sunday, Family Research Council's fiscal year will come to an end, and we need your help to finish strong. If you can, head over to TonyPerkins.com and help us with a gift. And right now, your gift will be doubled through the generous help of friends of this ministry. Your help is needed as we keep fighting for the American family on Capitol Hill. That website, once more, is TonyPerkins.com. Project Veritas continues to show the animus that big tech companies show toward people of faith, this time capturing Google executives talking about how they can influence the 2020 election by suppressing opposing views. Joining Tony to talk about the world of big tech is Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri, who sits on the Judiciary Committee.
Senator Hawley, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks so much for having me.
Senator, first, I want to get your reaction to this news when you heard about this latest source of leaked documents, along with this video from Project Veritas showing more evidence that the big tech companies are trying to tilt the political playing field to the left.
You know, what's really surprising about it, Tony, is just that they're being so candid. But the truth is, we've known that this is what they have wanted to do. We've known that this is their agenda. You see evidence from the previous campaign back in 2016 when Google analysis of Google search results for, you know, presidential election, presidential news seemed to favor Hillary Clinton results over Donald Trump results again and again and again. Here's the scary thing. More and more voters, especially undecided voters, get their news from Google search.
Right.
I mean, they get their news through that platform. So this platform, with its monopoly power, has the ability to swing undecided votes. I mean, they could potentially swing an election. And there has been empirical studies done that show this. I mean, this is something that we should all be concerned about. And that's why we should say to Google and to Facebook and to Twitter, if they want to get these special immunities from government, these special carve-outs, they ought to abide by First Amendment values.
Well, I want to get to that because you introduced legislation last week. But before I bring up that specific piece of legislation, I want to play a very short clip because you talked about the search engine of Google, where people get their news. And that was a part of this undercover video. I want to play this short clip of this Google executive caught by Project Veritas.
All
right, that was recorded in a restaurant, and it's kind of hard to hear, but here's what they said. We are also training our algorithms. If 2016 happened again, would the outcome be different? 2020 is certainly on the top for my old organization, Trust and Safety's top of mind. They have been working on it since 2016 to make sure that we are ready for 2020. Senator, that's what you're talking about. The search is the algorithms, which directs what people get when they do a search. Again, it is amazing to me that they're so blatant and openly talking about this, but we need to take notice of this. If they're talking about it openly, saying that they're adjusting the algorithms, that they're going to direct what people get, we need to listen to what they're saying and act upon that now.
Yeah, I mean, exactly right. I mean, we should take seriously what they admit that they're doing, let alone what they're doing that we don't know about. We've got another Google executive employee in the same Project Veritas operation that's on the record. It gets caught saying that we need to make sure that we're able to prevent the Trump situation or this Trump situation so that it doesn't happen again. What we're talking about here is the will of the voters, Tony. We're talking about democracy. I mean, you've got Google executives and Google employees saying we want to manipulate the information that goes to voters so that they will vote the way that we, Google, want them to vote.
Right. Right.
That's not democracy. That's not the rule of the people. That's ruled by this multinational corporation named Google that, by the way, gets all these special deals from the federal government. And this is my point. Google shouldn't be getting special deals and special immunities from the federal government if they're going to try to influence the outcome of elections, if they're going to censor conservatives.
Well, let's talk about that, Senator, because we're not just analyzing the problem here. You've actually taken steps to address it. Last week, introducing the Ending Support for Internet Censorship Act. This amends Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act to encourage major tech platforms to provide content moderation that is politically neutral. So explain exactly what your legislation would do and the outcome.
Well, what it says is in exchange for these special immunities that Google and Facebook and Twitter get from the federal government, they should have to submit to an audit that shows that they are not discriminating against conservatives or against any other political viewpoint. I mean, basically what we're asking to do is, why don't you embrace the First Amendment values that all of us as Americans agree on, which is that, you know, free speech ought to be free. That doesn't mean Google has to promote conservative speech. Just don't discriminate against it. And if Google doesn't want to do that, because they're a private company, Tony, if they don't want to do that and they want to be out there as a progressive left-wing company, that's fine. But then they shouldn't get these special deals, the special immunity from government. They need to choose. If they're going to get their special status, then they should embrace the First Amendment values that Americans all agree on.
Hey, Senator, let me ask you this. You know, some people say, well, we don't want government involved in the Internet. We don't want the government involved in this. This is the way we communicate. But, I mean, how is this not like Mall Bell years ago when, you know, they had a monopoly on a means of communication, and the government has long overseen these monopolies. And when you think about it, these big tech companies are now really the guardians of what has become the virtual public square.
Well, it is true, Tony, that they exercise, Google, for instance, of just incredible control. I mean, they are overwhelmingly the predominant search engine. Their control of news and information is really unprecedented in the country, in our history. I mean, you have to go all the way back to the turn of the century. So that is absolutely true. Here's the other thing, though, Tony, is that the same companies and the same, a lot of these same people said just a year ago that we couldn't possibly change the law to make sure that we got sex trafficking off of these platforms. They said, oh, no, you can't do that. I mean, if that's government interference.
Right.
I mean, banning sex trafficking online is government regulating the Internet. It's a slippery slope. It'll shut down the Internet. That hasn't happened. That's just nonsense. And so I would just say to my libertarian friends out there, the same people who opposed getting rid of sex trafficking online and now say, oh, no, we can't possibly hold Google to a First Amendment standard. Is this really what you want? I mean, you really want to empower this company to get special deals from government and use those special deals to try and influence elections? I mean, that's your vision of what democracy is? That's crazy.
So they have a choice. They can either treat everyone fairly and allow people to express their views on their platforms uncensored in terms of political ideological content, or they lose their immunity where they can be held accountable for what they do to people who try to communicate on those platforms.
That's exactly right. I mean, that's exactly right. And I think that, again, it is not too much to ask that these big companies, and my bill would only apply to the biggest companies, because the truth is, you know, we need more competition. I mean, we need more platforms. We need more platforms challenging Google and Facebook and Twitter. So my bill only applies to the biggest companies, to those that actually have monopoly power and can shut off speech, you know, those that can put their thumb on the scale of an election. It only applies to them, and it just says, again, embrace the First Amendment if you want to get these special carve-outs. Otherwise, you know, again, if they want to be liberal companies, they want to influence the debate in a liberal way, that's fine.
Yeah.
But we ought to treat them then like any other publisher.
Sounds like a fair deal to me. Senator Josh Hawley, as always, great to have you on. Thanks so much for taking time out to join us this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
You can find out more about Senator Hawley over at TonyPerkins.com. While you're there, why don't you consider being with us for the Values Voter Summit coming up in October in Washington, D.C. You'll join like-minded individuals as you hear from dozens of speakers talking about faith, family, and freedom. That website, once more, is TonyPerkins.com.
On the day of a baby's birth, the first article placed on the baby is a thermal hat with blue and pink stripes. That's our hope for every baby. But there are no federal laws in place to protect all babies born alive from being killed outside the womb. To show your support for the life of all babies born alive, visit endbirthdayabortion.com. For a donation of $9, we'll deliver one baby hat on your behalf to U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to send a powerful reminder that babies should be welcomed with warmth.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. A couple of weeks ago, the State Department released its annual report on international religious freedom, which found a chilling array of religious suppression around the world. Joining FRC President Tony Perkins to talk about the report is the U.S. Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom, Sam Brownback.
Ambassador, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks, Tony. Good to join you.
Well, good to talk with you. Let me ask you this. In your view, how does the State Department's annual religious freedom report this year compare to last? Are things getting better, worse, or where do we stand?
I think we've got some notable improvements in a few places. I think we've got a bigger spotlight put on China, what's taking place there. And I think the world is starting to take notice that the United States is serious about this. So let me just give you one example of a place, Burundi. There was 21 Seventh-day Adventists that were arrested on a Friday. And then the government seemed to start thinking, well, I don't know, we may get in trouble about this. And by Tuesday, they were out of jail. Well, they were still had gotten caught and they were in jail, but it was like, look, we just don't want to be nailed in the global media about this. And so I think you're seeing us have a positive impact by this attention we're giving to the topic.
I would agree in my U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom role, which works separate from but in conjunction with what you do. You're a member of our commission, a non-voting member, but the State Department's report different from our report, our report focusing strictly on the religious freedom issue. One difference in your report, or the State Department's report, I should say, from that of the USERF was Uzbekistan. We recommended that they continue to be a country of particular concern, although we did note that they were trending in a positive direction and were hopeful that they might come off the list. State Department taking them off the list this year.
We did. And by the way, I want to congratulate you on your new chairmanship on the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. That's a fabulous role. And I'm delighted particularly a person of your stature and faith would take that job because it's really important that we have people that are really into this topic and aggressive about it, and willing to do these leadership roles. Yeah, we take a little different view than the commission on it because we've been working closely with the Uzbeks. We've been working with them on several topics. They let 13,000 political and religious prisoners out of jail. They started opening up a few churches, not very many, but a few. And we felt like, look, we think we can really help bring them along. They're still on our special watch list. They're not off the category altogether. But we're hopeful, and so far our discussions have been really pretty good with Uzbekistan.
I would say we've seen positive developments there, and I do think this administration putting a focus on religious freedom is drawing the attention of leaders around the world. We're out of time, but I'm going to get you back on to talk about this later, but upcoming middle of July will be the second international gathering of leaders to talk about the advancement of religious freedom. Excited about that?
115 countries invited. Over 900 people have registered to attend. We're about to close registration because we're just out of space, but a lot of interest, and I think we're really going to move the ball forward there.
Another example of America's leadership on this important topic, yourself, the Secretary of State, the Vice President, the President. Ambassador, thanks so much for joining us. Out of time, but we're going to get you back on to talk more about the upcoming ministerial.
Sounds good. Thanks, Tony. God bless you guys.
You can find out more about Ambassador Brownback and the State Department's report when you visit TonyPerkins.com. While you're there, why don't you join our efforts to send 90,000 thermal baby hats to Speaker Pelosi's office as a statement on the value of life. All the details are there on our webpage, tonyperkins.com.
Are you concerned about the future of our country? Do you want to help? Come to the Values Voters Summit in Washington, D.C. on October 11th through the 13th and join thousands of Americans who, like you, want life to be valued, families to flourish, and religious liberty to thrive. Invited and confirmed speakers include Sebastian Gorka, Bill Bennett, Laura Ingraham, and Reverend Franklin Graham. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. In recent weeks, the legislature in the state of Ohio has been finalizing their budget, and this last week, the Senate made a change to the budget, increasing the amount allocated to pro-life crisis pregnancy centers to $5 million. Joining Family Research Council President Tony Perkins to talk about the budget is the president of the Senate in Ohio, Larry Obhoff. Here's Tony Perkins.
Senator, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Senator, what's behind the motivation to put more money into these care pregnancy centers?
Well, we have about 200 pregnancy centers across Ohio, and they're providing pretty valuable services to women in need. And that's true for rural communities, suburban and urban alike. And they're primarily serving low-income women, women below the poverty level who need help. And what we've tried to do in recent years is fund some of the pro-life alternatives to move away from what we had been doing previously. We actually did a bill a few years ago to reprioritize funding for women's health away from organizations that are performing non-therapeutic abortions, so largely Planned Parenthood. They actually took us to court over it. It went up to the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals in the federal courts, and the state was successful this spring in defending that law. So this is the first budget opportunity that we've had since then to invest additional funds into crisis pregnancy centers, and I'm proud of the work that we've been able to do so far.
Now, Senator, in the last decade or more and more of these centers have become full service medical clinics where, as you say, they serve the underprivileged, many of those that don't have access in some of these areas. But it's done without any ethical concerns because there's no abortions there. It's just health care and help for these women who are pregnant.
That's right, and they're providing a lot of different services, whether that's parenting classes or referrals for access to prenatal care or other medical and mental health, addiction support services, needs for mothers. So there are some pregnancy centers in my area that pass out some of the things that new mothers need, clothing, diapers, those types of things. So they really are running the gamut on what they're providing to people who need it. And they're doing some very good work in our communities. And again, we've got over 200 of those centers here in Ohio. So chances are, whatever community you live in Ohio, they're helping someone in your community or touching someone that you know.
Senator Obhoff, I know that you've got clear Republican majorities in there, but there has been opposition to this. Do you see any problem with this moving forward in the budget?
Well, we are in conference committee right now, so we're sorting out the differences between the House and the Senate versions of the bill this week. But I feel pretty strongly that this will be in the final version of the bill. We have a strong pro-life majority in the House, and interestingly, in the Senate, while we had this funding in there and while we had a substantial tax cut, we worked pretty closely with our friends on the other side of the aisle, and we passed the bill 33-0. So, I think that even some of the pro-choice minded Democrats in the Senate recognized that additional funding for women's health and additional options for women's health is a positive thing.
Well, that's quite encouraging, actually, and I imagine the Governor DeWine, clearly pro-life, would eagerly sign this into law.
I think that's right. Governor DeWine is pro-life and has a long record on that. And earlier this year, we passed the Heartbeat Bill, which was a Senate-sponsored bill, and Governor DeWine signed that pretty quickly, within a day or two of when we passed it. So I think overall, on the ground here in the Ohio legislature and in the governor's office, you've got some good allies for the pro-life movement.
Well, Senator Abhoff, what I like about this is, you know, as you redirect money, as states redirect money away from Planned Parenthood because of the ethical concerns, the complaint or the charge is always raised that this is going to deny women health care services. This answers that question.
I think that's right. And again, whether it's parenting classes or giving ultrasounds or providing things like diapers and clothing, they're doing a lot of different things that are helping women in need. And while the Democratic members of the legislature aren't supportive of this provision, I do believe that they will ultimately be in support of the overall package in the bill that we're presenting.
All right. Senator Larry Abhoff, thank you so much, and thanks for your leadership on what I think is a very important and creative solution to many of the problems facing us out there. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Just a reminder that you can take a stand for life, too, when you head over to TonyPerkins.com and join our effort to send 90,000 Thermal Baby hats to Speaker Pelosi's office. All the details are there on our webpage, TonyPerkins.com.
Did you know that babies survive failed abortions? Sadly, many are denied their right to life and are allowed to die. Congress and state legislators across the country have put forth the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act to protect these babies. Leftist politicians have blocked efforts to pass this life-saving legislation. As a country, we must reject infanticide and pursue protections of those most vulnerable among us. For more information, visit frc.org/bornalive.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. As I'm sure you're aware, the national debt is over $22 trillion, and a good amount of that money is spent on endeavors that can actually survive without the government's intervention. And that's why Republican Congressman Doug Lamborn of Colorado introduced legislation that would eliminate federal funding for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and National Public Radio. And Congressman Lamborn joined Tony on Tuesday to discuss his bill.
Congressman Lamborn, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hello, Tony. It's always good to talk with you.
Well, I am grateful you're taking this issue on. The president actually zeroed this out in his budget. Congress put it back in last year. But you make a point in an op-ed piece that you've written that these dollars, which is only – they're only 15% of the overall budget for the agency or the entity, but they're using that – those monies against the values of many parents across the country.
Well, that's exactly right, Tony. It's a disturbing and new development. I mean, I've always traditionally said, hey, this is an organization that can stand on its own two feet. Let them do that. They don't need the taxpayer money. They have some popular programming. They have advertising revenue. They really don't need the taxpayer money to survive. They can thrive without it. So let's cut these annual deficits we have by $500 million. That's serious money. But you know what's happened recently, Tony, is that they're starting to air on the their children's cartoon show Arthur. They had a pro-gay marriage segment,
right?
And the writer who wrote that said, quote, that's not the kind of world we want to live in. We want our children educated so they can see there's not just one type of family. So it's a not a traditional value approach to marriage, and he was kind of pushing it as his viewpoint. And, you know, it's one thing if a private TV show on one of the networks does something like that, but this is taxpayer subsidized. And people of faith, people with traditional values, don't want their tax dollars necessarily going to promote something they really totally disagree with.
Right, and it's frustrating for parents that you have cartoons where you think it would be safe for PBS. And this is a long-running. We've talked about this this program, Arthur, one of the longest-running, the longest-running cartoon on television. And, you know, they're using this to undermine the values of the parents to take these messages subtly to the children. And you're just saying, hey, you got a right to do that, but not necessarily with our tax dollars.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, I believe in freedom of speech if you're paying for it yourself. But why should people who are church-going and have traditional values subsidize something they totally disagree with? And also on NPR, Tony, when you watch them, for instance, how they cover the abortion debate, they don't call people pro-life who are opposing abortion. They call them anti-abortion, I believe. They're not really even-handed in how they deal with that subject. And that's maybe kind of a subtle thing, but it just shows that in some ways there's a left-winging progressive bias. And once again, should all taxpayers of this country have to subsidize that?
Well, Congressman Lamborn, let's be real. When PBS, public broadcasting, was launched decades ago, there may have been a need for it. But today, with all of the media outlets that are out there, do we really need a government-subsidized media arm?
I don't believe we do. Times have changed. We don't just have the three networks now, and there needs to be a fourth viewpoint. We have hundreds. When you include the internet, and what's everything that's on the airwaves, TV, radio, etc., you have hundreds of outlets, hundreds of diverse viewpoints. There's no need to put out taxpayer dollars in these days of high deficits for another viewpoint when there's hundreds out there.
Yeah, if it were up to the government, they would still be producing buggy whips. You know, it's just they don't keep up with the time. And once something is created by government, it never goes away. How can folks help with this, Congressman Lamborn?
If they talk to their senators and their representatives in Washington and say, let's stop funding Corporation for Public Broadcasting and NPR once for all and for all.
All right. Well, we'll get them to weigh in on that. So thanks so much for taking the lead on that. And thanks for joining us today as well, Congressman Lamborn.
As always.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us. And I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.